Welcome to Phantom Island, brought to you by our friends at Homefield. My name is Stephen Godfrey. Thank you for listening to Phantom Island. This episode of Phantom Island, totally free. The rest of the episodes of Phantom, oh, well, some of them are free too. But if you want to support Phantom Island, you want access to our exclusive information, you want to hear our special shows like Single Wing and We're Not All Like This and Numbers and Words, go to phantomisland.show. Go right now. Thank you to our friends at Homefield. You can go check them out online. Kind of a dad hat summer going on over there at Homefield, by the way. You should check it out. This is it, sort of, for a lot of you, but not exactly. So let me explain myself, because that didn't make any sense. I'm going to bring on Hector Diaz. Everybody knows who Hector Diaz is, and if you don't, you need to go follow him on social media. He is a social media expert, essentially the brains behind social media efforts back at Vox Media and SB Nation and LA Times and Split Zone Duo. It's at I Am Hector Diaz on, I think, most social media platforms. You've seen us probably interact with him before. Hector is the man. Hector is also a highly, highly knowledgeable individual who does a lot of work in professional wrestling. So I know what you're thinking. If you don't like pro wrestling, hang tight. This is an episode about that, sort of. Hector and I are going to take one idea, ask a question like we always do on an episode of Phantom Island, and it's going to be about this concept of a worked shoot. And if that doesn't mean anything to you, we'll explain it. But if you don't know anything about wrestling, you're fine. And if you're not interested in the world of professional wrestling, you're also still fine. Because really what we're going to do today is we're going to ask a question about entertainment and sports and what you need to tell the audience. What responsibility do you have to tell the audience what's real and what's not? That's it. So the term we're going to kick around is called a worked shoot. And we're going to take something that's happened in pro wrestling recently. This is very much an experimentation episode, okay? I know a lot of you have asked for like way more like hardcore specific stories from my days back in that industry. This is just examining an idea. So I hope you like it. Welcome on our friend Hector Diaz. This is Phantom Island.
Hector Diaz, could you introduce yourself before I start hitting you with questions?
Hi, I'm Hector Diaz. I'm a freelance social media specialist. I've done stuff for Split Zone Duo, Sickles Committee, Extra Points, a whole lot of other places. I've also done written pieces and social pieces for the LA Times about professional wrestling, which is going to come in handy right now because that's what we're talking about.
Do you think it's possible? We always ask a question to start every Phantom Island. I'm going to ask you a question before we ask the audience a question. Do you think it's possible we're going to make it through this episode and be able to explain to people what a worked shoot is? People who have never experienced pro wrestling before, because they're out there and they're listening to our program. This is going to be the toughest challenge we've had yet on this show. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I think we can do it. And I think at the end of this podcast, people will be looking at things outside of wrestling and going, oh, that's a work shoot, brother.
that's the secret that all of us who have worked in professional wrestling know, which is we take all of our lingo and terminology and then we look around in our lives and everything's a work, brother. All right, Hector Diaz, let's go. We're going to ask a question today, which is, do you have to know the truth about professional wrestling to enjoy it? Okay, so let's start with the concept of what a worked shoot is. I want to back up real fast. There is a language inside of pro wrestling that is, it's jargon, but it comes from a very specific place. Unlike other sports where you might have a little bit of cliche, a little bit of technical terminology that comes into play that, you know, the outsiders might not understand, something like a 2-3 zone, right? Or, man zone or banjo switching in football. I'm trying to think of things that like caught me up early in my career. Wrestling has an entire language almost that comes from carnies, as in like people who used to work the carnival. And so there is a word for almost every other like normal action or occurrence in the building of and the telling of the stories in pro wrestling. So a shoot means something is real. In the world of pro wrestling, obviously they are predetermined outcomes and storylines, right? And that's a work, which means it's been fabricated, right? For your entertainment, hopefully. But a shoot is something that happens for real that is not part of the story. So, in essence, worked shoot is a little bit of like an oxymoron, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. A worked shoot would imply, and this is one of the most popular terms on the wrestling internet, which is a scary, scary place. A worked shoot would imply that you're at home, you are watching WWE, you are watching AEW, you're watching whatever, pro wrestling, and you believe that something has happened that is off script, something real, a fan jumps in the ring, they're not supposed to, a move gets botched, someone gets legitimately angry at someone they're wrestling and maybe hits them for real. That's these are all shoots, right? But in the weird and bizarre world of professional wrestling, where there's this kind of meta text, meta reality of somewhat fabricated and somewhat real, what I've found in the last, well, I worked in professional wrestling from 2006 to about 11. When I left the industry, what I noticed was that everyone is convinced that there's always some sort of gradient here. There's always some sort of level of, you know, this is partially fabricated, this isn't, what's going on? Because the fascination, like, some people like professional wrestling, and then some people like the professional wrestling industry. And that's a huge difference, right? I think there are people who just love to watch the art of professional wrestling, or people who are just like, hey, once a year, me and my buddies, we're going to watch WrestleMania, right? And we remember, like, oh man, there's The Rock, there's Stone Cold Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan or whatever. And then there are people who really get off on sort of like picking apart the industry. Hector, how long have you been a professional wrestling fan?
Since I was like 10 years old. I was 10 at the peak of the Attitude Era. Okay. And it sort of like just followed me my entire life.
That's either a really good or really bad time to be 10 years old, is the peak of the Attitude Era. I feel like you got a lot of life experience, maybe.
Oh, yeah,
You probably learned some things at the peak of the Attitude Era.
Yeah, I don't think I should have been watching The Godfather at like 10, but like, you know, like the wrestler, not the movie. But, yeah. You know, I learned some things. Okay. But it's followed me my entire life. Like most people, I've had moments where I've like fallen off and then found it later on. For me, it was like 2012 or something. I found Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and like that type of wrestling, like the independence and all that stuff. And ever since then, I've been hooked as an adult.
So if you're listening to this and you don't know anything other than those like couple really famous names that I said, there is an entire universe of professional wrestling that exists probably out of like just the WWE that you're familiar with, if you're listening and you don't know. So there's a lot of, I don't want to call them boutique, but like very specific organizations. Obviously, they're smaller than the WWE. You can find different styles of professional wrestling. You can really get into the world, the universe of it. And if you're listening to this and you are a mark, just bear with me because I am trying to keep everybody at the dinner party on the same page. Okay. Hector, how old were you, do you think, when you figured it out that this is not a traditional sport?
Probably as a teenager. Obviously, like the pomp and circumstance was cool, like just the growing up. And then at some point that novelty sort of wore off. But I also think like that's why the concept of a work shoot just is sort of like ever present, because you always want to maintain that magic. But like, okay. You know, you watch enough wrestling matches and you're like, okay, they're going through the same motions. Something must be happening, right? Like someone doesn't necessarily have to tell you that like, hey, these two wrestlers in conjunction with the referee or whatever are working together to put on a show. Like eventually mm-hmm. it sort of clicks. But as a wrestling fan, you also just hear that from like people who aren't necessarily wrestling fans, right? Like that's the go-to. You tell them, hey, I really like professional wrestling. Their first question is like, it's fake, right? And it's like, yeah, of course. So you're always going to hear it like whispers.
There's a great, axiom, I guess, that I'll use anytime I talk about the industry. And I learned it from one of my former bosses, maybe the toughest and best boss I had. There's a professional wrestler named Double J, Jeff Jarrett. And he was one of five bosses that I had when I worked at Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. There were five people sort of running the company, which sounds as logical. If you're confused by hearing that, trust me, working there was great. Jeff used to say, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. And for those who do not believe, no explanation will do. Which basically means, like, if you love professional wrestling, you don't really need to buy into the fact that, you know, The Undertaker wasn't maybe an actual zombie, as I thought when I was 10 years old or 9 years old or whenever he debuted. 1990 Survivor Series, I was 9 years old. And, you know, for a while, I thought the man was maybe not undead, were actually zombified, but something significant had happened in his life, you know? And there was a point in time in which there was like another SummerSlam where, of course, we know now the guy just like needed time off. And he lost a match and he sort of ascended into the top of the arena via the Jumbotron, like as if he was dying. And my dad just sort of busts out laughing. And my dad loved professional wrestling, got me into the old like WCW, NWA, like, you know, they used to advertise Live Atlanta Wrestling. And he starts laughing and he would always kind of slap his leg and say, just the best Kabuki theater in the world. And I didn't understand what Kabuki theater was, but then he would laugh at these crazy dramatic moments. And I'm over here just like, you know, I wrote a get well card to Hulk Hogan when Earthquake crushed his ribs, right, as a kid.
That's incredible.
It was much more, yeah, talk about things I regret writing. It was much more, it was much more black and white. It was much more clear cut. And it's interesting to talk to someone who came up in the Attitude Era, because I was like basically in high school, and it was something you probably like, it was just like the records you were listening to where you were like starting to be rebellious against your parents and you know, teachers at school or whatever. Like the Attitude Era was perfect for that in high school, right? Dirty words, sexual suggestion, innuendo, like a little bit of gore, you know, a little bit of like sort of faux nudity. It was kind of like, you know, a living Maxim magazine at the time.
It was an opportunity for everyone, like a socially acceptable way to tell people to suck it. Like literally like a crotch chop to say
it brought it into the lexicon. The actual phrase suck it sort of enters the lexicon via professional wrestling. But that's not why we're here today. Today's wrestling fan, and this is kind of why you're here, Hector, is I sometimes struggle with the gray area of where professional wrestling fans want to be. If I go into a restaurant, I want a good meal. I might want to see how it's made. I might not. But a steak tastes the same, right? If you don't get to see the kitchen or if you do. And you can go and see the latest blockbuster action film in theaters. You can watch whatever television show you want to watch on streaming. And you don't necessarily have to insert yourself into the production process or worry about what was said in the writer's room or, you know, the disposition of the actor involved. And in professional wrestling, all of what I just said is very commonplace. The fans are not sort of satisfied with being customers in the restaurant. They want to be standing next to the sous chef as the ingredients are chopped up before it goes in. There is such a level of voyeurism, and I think it works perfect. Look, it works perfect in the podcast era. It works perfect in the digital media era where you can have, you know, rumor and innuendo and people's perspective all kind of aired out and accessible. But it didn't used to be like that. And the time that I spent in the industry as a young professional who just needed a job and didn't, you know, I knew like the average probably American consumer about WCW and WWF or E then F. But when I took the job, was that there had to be a little bit of like a firewall. There had to be sort of a barrier between, hey, this is what we're cooking up this meal or making these shows, these matches and these pay-per-view events. But the entire process should not necessarily be transparent to the viewer, to the audience. I want to ask you a couple questions because you are a consistent consumer to this day of pro wrestling product. I dip in and out, and I always tell people it's like, you know, in college I worked in a seafood restaurant and I didn't eat seafood for a long, long time. In fact, I still don't eat crawfish. That's when people ask why, like, why aren't you consistently watching this? Like, I'll dip in and out, but it's just like, I remember what it was like to come home smelling of seafood, if you will. So that's why I don't watch like every single week professional wrestling. Hector, as a fan right now and a consumer right now, do you think it's mandatory that promotions, or we can just say WWE, maintain a level of transparency with their audience? And what I mean by that specifically is like they break and sort of communicate to the audience about the storylines.
That's a good question, because like I think the concept of a work shoot works like if it's sprinkled. It's also just very interesting in that regard, because it gets a little messy when it becomes the promotion or the booker, like AKA the person who actually writes these stories, like to command that sort of momentum when it becomes It goes from shoot to like work shoot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going back to your idea of like the chef, and I'm just reminded of like the chef's table at a restaurant, right? Like some people actually want that chef's table. They want to see the food being made. They want it to be prepped. And there's a little bit of a messiness that people like really enjoy. Like there's a reason everyone says they hate office gossip, yet they're always talking about office gossip.
Yeah.
Like it's, you can't deny that it has its like tantalizing qualities, you know?
This episode of Phantom Island is brought to you by our friends at Home Field. Please go and check out Home Field. Please prepare yourself accordingly as you listen to this in mid-July, early July. I don't know which July it is. You know what you need? You know what you need in July across this country? Because I've been all over the country this summer. I've been in Europe this summer. You know what you need? You need a damn hat. Because the world, the whole globe is approximately 95 degrees with 80% humidity right now. Every single place I've gone to escape the heat this summer, the heat has been there. I've been wearing a hat. You need a hat. You need a dad hat. I don't even know if dads are wearing dad hats as much as other people from other walks of life are wearing dad hats now because they're so popular. As part of the Home Field Summer School Series, you can check out new hats. As I record this, they have 8 new Penn State hats up. There are a ton of other schools. You can go check it out. They have quarter zips in stock, and they also have their Diamond Classics, which basically, look, there's some baseball jerseys in here. Occasionally, Home Field will move the spirit to the point where I'm just like, you know what? I have no affiliation with this, but I would, yeah. That Diamond Classic, looking at you, like, looking at you, Clemson and Arkansas, pretty damn good. Indiana State, by the way. I have no connection to Indiana State. Why am I interested in Indiana State baseball jersey? And it's because of the amazing design that our friends at Home Field Apparel do. So go check out Home Field Apparel. It's homefieldapparel.com. Thank you to Home Field for sponsoring this episode.
So a couple basic questions here that I get a lot, which is, yeah, I did work in professional wrestling. Obviously, I was not a wrestler. I worked for basically the, like, I used to say the Pepsi to WWE's Coke back in the 2000s. But really, it was almost more like the RC Cola, or like an even more regional soda than that. L8, shout out to Kentucky. But I worked at Total Nonstop Action Wrestling, and I did work with a bunch of names that people would instantly like recognize, like Hulk Hogan and Mick Foley and Kurt Angle and a bunch of those people that you grew up watching at WWF, WWE. And then I also worked with a younger generation who I spent a lot of time with trying to get them to become famous. That was sort of my job. I had several different titles. I worked on several different projects, and I helped do a lot of different things in the almost 5 years I was there. But I learned about the television industry first and foremost, but I also was just sort of in charge of like making stars, trying to make people know these younger wrestlers the way that we instantly recognize the legacy names, the legacy guys. Boy, I bet they love being called legacy names. And when I was doing that, like I said, we kind of had to keep a little bit of a firewall, and people would always say, like, is it fake? And when I first started working, Hector, I would just be like, oh yeah, of course. I mean, like, yeah, you know, it's fake. Like, everything's predetermined. And that was almost like my reporter's brain, where I was like answering a question truthfully and honestly, but almost naively. And what I learned 5 years later when I left the industry was, when people said, is it fake? I would always just answer with, well, what do you think? And that infuriates people. It drives people nuts because they think I'm insulting their intelligence when they say, well, of course it's fake. Like, you know, The Undertaker's not dead, or this guy's not this, or whatever. And like, these guys are all working together, and I know this, and that's not how you punch somebody, right? I always love that one. That's not how you punch somebody. Yeah, no kidding. You know, you can't, you know, he didn't really want to throw him off the top of that cage, or, you know, whatever the story is. I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. I will 100% right now grant you in a conversation that the fight that you saw possesses a level of choreography. By the way, I hate using that word as it relates to pro wrestling, but today we're going to use a lot of non-pro wrestling terms for the non-pro wrestling audience. So yes, the matches have predetermined outcomes, but as Hector can tell you as well, sometimes those outcomes aren't determined until they get in the ring. And sometimes things go sideways. Sometimes things are crazy. the characters that the individuals portray, this is where I really like to kind of like, I guess it's a form of screwing with people, I don't know, but there's an element of reality to every great professional wrestler you've ever seen, any name you know. There is a truthfulness to their character, and there is also sometimes a level of genuine acrimony and competitive disdain for the person that you're working with. Does that mean that, like, if Hector and I were wrestling and I wanted my character to be more famous and popular and sell more t-shirts and win the WWE title, am I going to start hitting Hector in the face for real? No. But do you compete with your colleagues at work? Yes. And so in that environment, it does become a little dramatic, right? A little gossipy, like you said, like a little soap opera-esque. Except your job is to also make a soap opera. So the lines get really, really blurred in the process. I don't know if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. And like, there's the one component that you haven't mentioned. It's like adrenaline. Like in the ring, you're like performing these like athletic tasks, right? And like, you might have a plan of how something's going to go, but you know, you might slip, you might actually hit somebody, something unplanned will happen. And with the adrenaline and the, I guess, lack of planning, like, people will get mad, and that sort of can evolve into something bigger, whether it stays in the ring, whether it extends outside the ring. Yeah.
The other issue here that I didn't mention is, like, let's say Hector and I are on similar career trajectories, and one of us is a good guy, one of us is a bad guy. We have to go wrestle 20 times this year. Okay. Very common. We're going to place you guys together, and we're going to have a storyline about how you guys don't like each other. And you guys are going to wrestle 20 times this year. If you're good at your job and people want to pay to see this happen 20 times, it means you're going to do things with your body that are inherently risky. And so not only are you in competition with this individual, but you're sort of using this physical language to keep each other safe while competing with one another. Because these are very large individuals moving very quickly, as Hector mentioned, and also trusting each other with their bodies and lives. So it becomes very, very sensitive, and this stirs up a lot of emotion. Hector, if you and I were football players and we decided who's the better football player, well, there's a pretty easy way to do that, right? If we both played the same position, we would compete. One of us would run faster than the other. One of us would catch more passes than the other or tackle better than the other. If we were actors, we would enter into a more subjective world. But Hollywood would also let us know, again, through a series of maybe bias systems, well, this person is, they've certainly got more talent to act, right? They certainly can perform better than the other one. If you combine those two things, you never really achieve an objective truth. It's very, very hard. And so the industry is filled with people who, because of it's a mix of raw athleticism and a sort of unique performance ability and combining elements of acting and elements of stage performance, it's almost impossible to objectively say, hey, that guy's the best. Because this happens anytime wrestling people get around each other. You start naming some guys, right? I can name you some guys, and I'm not going to name names because these are people the people who come to mind are people I worked with who I liked, who are amazing in the ring. Like, if we put them in the ring, they would be awesome and they could tell a story with their bodies. But you know what? If I handed them a microphone and I said, I need you to cut a promo, which is just when the wrestler talks to the audience, it would be dead flat, right? So how many people do you know that have the ability of like an Aaron Donald, okay, on the field, but they can turn around and either be, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis or Andy Samberg? It's a pretty rare combination, right?
Not that many people, yeah.
Yeah, it's damn near impossible. So we're going to use a recent example here to walk through this. Hector, could you, in a couple sentences, if anyone needs this to be described, can you explain to me John Cena in the year 2025?
John Cena in the year 2025, he started off with like a farewell tour, basically telling the fans, this is my last year. And it was supposed to kind of culminate at WrestleMania, where he faced then WWE champion Cody Rhodes, sort of pitting that, like, will he not win the championship in his last match. John Cena, who has been a perennial babyface, aka a good guy, he like he does all these Make-A-Wish things. He is very much a character for like little kids for inspiration. He turns heel. He becomes the bad guy. And not only does he become the bad guy, he wins at WrestleMania and continues his like his swan song, essentially. And now he's sort of like facing the who's who of his career. One of those people was R-Truth, who is in his 50s, but he's been a mainstay at WWE. He, for the most part, in WWE was a like is a comedic wrestler. He always was in like just jokey segments, but he really played his role really well. One of his most famous things was having an invisible little kid that he called Little Jimmy. And like, he also said he idolized John Cena growing up, despite them being either the same age or Truth being older.
Oh, I definitely think R-Truth is a good 10 years older than John.
Okay. Yeah. So, so there's the joke there, but, in a subsequent, title match for John Cena, he faced R-Truth. R-Truth sort of, showed that he's capable of being more than like a comedy character. For people who don't know, like, comedy characters can be elevated to like a top tier main event status, but usually they're like lower on the card, right?
Yeah,
like it's to keep you entertained for the main event, for the tougher, more serious characters or whatever. Truth faces John Cena, he loses. And then, I think it's like the 1st of June, he like posts on Twitter that he, is released, quote unquote, from WWE. But it, I think the report turns out that he, that his contract wasn't renewed. So that's the whole trajectory of John Cena and then extending to Truth there.
So I think everyone listening would know John Cena is sort of the superhero action figure brought to life for the better part of 20 years. He's the recognizable brand name. Ron Killings, R-Truth, in his ring name, is, let's say, like a sort of consistent role player, a supporting actor, if you will, a supporting character inside of WWE. But he has organically, as Hector said, sort of created these great comedy bits that involve John Cena over the years. To be super clear, if this is your first time here, when Hector said that Killings or R-Truth had posted that he had been let go, there's this new thing that happens now that which did not happen back in my day, which is that there is kayfabe, which is the fictional world of these characters. Then there is reality or going shoot, which is our actual reality. We're going to get really existential and philosophical here for a second. For years, when I worked in the industry, we had to protect kayfabe, protect the industry, brother. Like, seriously, I would get yelled at when I had television crews in from, like, you know, when I worked at TNA, we would have to work a lot with other Viacom properties because we had a contract with Spike TV. So we had to have MTV shows about like kids and teenagers in reality competitions to become like a wrestler for a day. But we had to abide by the rules of kayfabe in certain places, meaning like we had to treat these characters as if they were always in character in our world. If you are currently lost, believe me, working in this was just as confusing, but this is sort of a very, very old school philosophy. A couple years ago, this is why Hector's laughing as we record, WWE finally gave up the ghost and acknowledged publicly that pretty much everybody watching this, whether they were 9 or 90, understood that there was, this is a show, this is a performance. And this is where we get into work shoot and that sort of meta world of whether it's 100% reality or 100% a constructed story. Because what wrestling fans seem to sort of go insane debating is when it's a little bit of both. And what I teased at earlier is that it is often a little bit of both. So R-Truth posts that he had been released by WWE. That's real, right? That is 100% real. These guys have contracts the same way you and I might have a contract with a company. And in a somewhat surprising fashion, WWE, by the way, Hector, can you very briefly explain where they are in a corporate structure?
Yeah. So for the longest time, they were a publicly traded company, but they were their own entity. And about 2 years ago, they sold, which is something people never expected, especially under Vince McMahon. Then they sold to Endeavor, which formed the TKO company, and TKO owns both WWE and UFC. So they've got the big players in the combat sports space. And since then, McMahon has left unceremoniously, and now the people in charge are, I believe it's Nick Khan and Triple H, the wrestler from the Attitude Era, who's mostly doing the storyline and bigger picture things.
So much the same way that like a professional sports franchise would release a player because they've got to make budget or free up some cap space. This is what happens in our reality to the wrestler Ron Killings, known as R-Truth, right? So we're accepting of this. Hector, again, you're much more wrestling online wrestling community adjacent. What happens when fans find out about this?
When people find out about it, they get really mad. They get really devastated. They get sad because it's one of the, you know, personalities they've been rooting for on screen, right? For Truth, it's especially significant because he was just like at the top of the card. He was the main event. Fans gave, or WWE gave fans a reason to root for Truth. Because if you have to root for R-Truth in order to make the match with John Cena compelling. Right. Like, and yes, John Cena won, R-Truth didn't, but you created this upticking momentum with Truth only to sort of release him, and fans see that and they get mad, especially on the internet. Yeah.
And then, in reality, Killings is no longer a member of the WWE roster. We move on. Hector, what happens next in the fictitious reality, the kayfabe world of WWE, to John Cena at a recent large event, major event?
So John Cena goes on to another storyline. He's in a tag match, I believe, at Money in the Bank. And he gets ambushed by somebody wearing a black hoodie.
What?
Right? Yeah. Who could it be? It turns out to be R-Truth. He is back. And this is with an entire week of like WWE fans chanting, "We want Truth." Like the anger and disappointment was so prevalent that like not only were people on the internet talking about it, like fans were chanting, "We want Truth" during like other matches, which I assume as a performer, not connected to that, like sucks because you're
not
trying to do your
feeling.
Job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But it's R-Truth. He's back. He's in WWE just a couple days after saying that he got released. And he's got a microphone and he says he's no longer R-Truth. He is going by his given name of Ron Killings.
So the man, Ron Killings, comes back. He changes his character, and now he's receiving not only was he not an actual real life member of this company anymore, he was let go, but he's been brought back and given what we call a push, which just basically means that he's being prominently featured in WWE television out of nowhere. So if you're scoring at home in the real world, this guy works as a supporting player for a long time in WWE. He has a storyline that fans really latch on to pretty late in his career. The man's, I mean, he's 53, by the way. He's 5 years older than Cena, not 10. And then he gets cut kind of inexplicably because, hey, corporations are weird and bad and these things happen and, you know, there's a human cost to it. So he gets cut from the roster the same way your favorite athlete would. But then he shows back up in a dramatic way, Hector, on television. And because it fits so satisfyingly that he runs in and he stops Cena and then he's changing his character, wrestling fans, and this is where it becomes something specific to pro wrestling, they don't just applaud and say, "Oh man, they brought back this guy I like." And they don't necessarily buy it credulously outright and say, "Well, I'm excited to see what he does next," or "That was fun." What a wrestling fan does is takes one big step back and says, "They planned this the entire time." So even though Killings in real life came out and said, "I've been released by the company," guys, that was fake. That was part of the storyline. And this is where I wanted to get to today, which is that wrestling fans, live in a state of perpetual, it's not cynicism. I think it's just a sort of disbelief and paranoia that any and everything that happens in our real world could maybe actually be faked or fabricated. And for what the next couple of weeks, it's believed. I think it really just becomes sort of the consensus belief amongst fans that, hey, this was, we got screwed. We got tricked. Wrestling fans do not like that. They passionately love a fictitious product, but they also want to simultaneously be able to discern what is real and what is fake the entire time.
It is the vagueness of magic sort of aligned almost too closely to conspiratorial thinking.
Yes, that's a great way to put it, actually. And if you've ever been to like Vegas and seen a sort of traditional like magician's review, you don't necessarily believe that a man is flying on stage or a woman's been cut in half or, you know, whatever it is, or David Blaine eats a card and then it turns into a pigeon or, you know, whatever. But you also don't go through the experience with the aggressive level of doubt. Like you have to you have to buy in and let go at some part of the process to be a willing participant in the magic. And so my question today to you is, it's very weird for me because I worked in professional wrestling and I grew really comfortable with the ambiguity. I grew really comfortable with the fact that, yeah, we are doing something that is a predetermined physical display that tells a story. But the more you work in it and the more you get to know these individuals and understand the dynamics of the business, the best fake things are rooted in truth, rooted in reality. So the reality, by the way, and I'm going to cite a reporter here who I used to know professionally way back when, his name's Mike Johnson, PW Insider. He wrote a very clean and sort of concise report as an actual, in this world, reporter on professional wrestling that, no, he actually got cut. He was a casualty of the business. He was a casualty of making budget. And the organic reaction of the fans helped WWE decide, hey, you know what? We kind of screwed up and we can turn this into something. We can make lemonade out of lemons.
And like, it's all about momentum, really. If you're coming with a good storyline or if you really want to elevate an up and coming superstar, if you see the fire there, you grab it, right? And you try to make the most out of it. Usually it's, you know, within your control as the person planning the show. But, you know, if it's out of your control in like this situation, you bring it back, you put it in the spotlight and say like, here it is, you know, and, you know, the fans will gravitate towards it.
My question to you is, as a professional wrestling fan, do you feel like you need to know the honest truth in the construction of the act? Do you need to be at the chef's table or can you just enjoy the meal?
I think you can just enjoy the meal for the most part, but man, those moments when there's an argument happening right beside you, you're going to eat it up, right? But I think it's because of that variety. Like if everything was constructed in pro wrestling as a work shoot, then nothing really is, right? Because it would just be like edgy or just like over the top for the sake of it. But if you have all of these things that sort of go according to a quote unquote plan, and then you have something that's a little off the rails, you're like, well, something else is happening. Something different's happening there. And that'll capture the attention of like both like diehard professional wrestling fans, but also like really pique the interest of like casual viewers. Well, they'll say, you know, this seems a little different. This seems a little off. And I think it's especially like beneficial when you have, you know, the diehard fan next to a casual fan where you start asking those questions again. Is this supposed to happen? Is he really like, was he really fired? And then it just sort of conjures up that magic again.
I'm going to use an example here that sounds insane, but everything I'm about to tell you actually happened. People always ask on the internet about what, you know, what was it like? What happened with this? The best example, I can't recall in the 5 years I was in the business of us cutting someone and bringing them back 2 weeks later that was actually that really happened. Now, we definitely on TV said, oh, we're going to have a loser leaves town match. Like, that's an old school gimmick where we're going to take someone off TV for a while. Maybe they need to, you know, get a knee scoped or something like that. And then they're going to run back in 3 months later. But they were actually under contract in real life with our company the whole time. We were just giving them a break. Or for story reasons, we were holding them off TV for a couple of weeks to build up anticipation or to surprise people. I can't recall a moment off the top of my head in my 5 years where we legit fired someone and rehired them 2 weeks later because people wouldn't stop chanting their name and then turned it into a story. But what I can tell you is this. If you, Hector, are you familiar at all with a wrestler named the Monster Abyss?
Yes, I am.
Okay. One of the more surreal moments of my life. Imagine if you could, someone who's about 6'6", he's about an inch taller than me, about 300, ballpark 300. Okay. Former offensive lineman at Ohio University, go Bobcats, where he got his master's in sports management. Imagine this guy, and he looks pretty much like the old school Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the killer, right? So kind of a leather face get up, right? That was his gimmick. He was called the Monster Abyss. So he wore a mask and he was like a monster or a demon. He was literally called the Monster Abyss. He would wrestle a lot of hardcore matches. So he'd have like tacks stuck in him and stuff like that. In real life, he was the sweetest human being I worked with in 5 years. His name was Chris. He was an absolute gem of a human being. I got engaged while we were on tour. I was in England when I got engaged to my current wife, my wife. And the Monster Abyss in full gear that night ran up and hugged her and talked about like, oh my God, have you set a date yet? I'm so excited for you guys. So just imagine a guy who's in like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre outfit backstage, just being like, have you picked out a China pattern? One of the many surreal moments of my life. The Monster Abyss and I are in Ireland. We're in Dublin, Ireland, and we are about to go on live television, like their version of the Today Show, to promote tickets going on sale for an event that we were going to have like 4 months later. We're coming in and doing what's called an advance, which basically just means you and the promoter get together, you bring talent over, and you hype it up so people will buy tickets for your event a couple weeks later. Because the more tickets you sell early, the better it's going to be for your live event. And so our bit that morning was to have Chris, the Monster Abyss, in full outfit, full leather face outfit, do the weather on live television in Ireland. And right before we go out to do the weather on live television in Ireland, I'm in like early stage iPhone. I get a notification, and I don't know what time it is back in the States, that the previously mentioned Jeff Jarrett, who's a professional wrestler and part of our creative team, which means he was like our head writer, and he founded the promotion with his dad, but he was a part owner of the company at that point, like a minority owner. He had been forced to take a leave of absence. But internally, he was like suspended because in the real world, Hector, in the real world, my hand motions are not coming off on an audio medium. He was in a relationship with the estranged sort of soon to be ex-wife of our top wrestler, Kurt Angle. This happened in the real world. OK, Jared at the time was a widower. Kurt Angle, his wife, Karen, they split up. They were married. They had kids. They got divorced. And this relationship started in the workplace, if you will. We found out because Jarrett was a minority owner, the majority owner, a woman named Dixie Carter, like basically temporarily suspended him. And things were like not good. All right. There was a lot of corporate intrigue in the real world. Months go by. Jeff was off TV for a long time. All the principals involved had to sit down and like really talk this over. So I just want to be really clear here. Like, your starting quarterback is getting divorced, and then one of your players who's also kind of your head coach starts dating his estranged wife. Okay, that's where we're at. Really fun staff meetings. I just want to point this out. Really fun staff meetings for like 3 months. We thought the whole company was going to go under. Fast forward a year later, we took this entire saga. I did not, but I just worked at the company. And we put it on television. And what I mean by that is we created a feud between Jeff, the wrestling character, and Kurt, the wrestling character, and Karen, now, who ended up marrying Jeff, by the way, marrying Jeff. And she would appear on television as well as a character. we put this actual real corporate saga that happened to us in the real world, and we just said, you know what? This is a good storyline. So the principals involved agreed, and then we created a slightly fictitious version of what actually happened, and we put it on our program as a storyline, even though it was completely based in reality. We would have never done this unless these individuals had gone through and did this in their own real personal lives. If that isn't the explanation you're looking for, I don't know what else I can do, because yes, it happened in the real world, but yes, it was also a storyline on television. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's going back to office gossip. Like, this is the extreme version of it, but like, yeah, people will watch it, and people did.
Yes. I can give a more benign example of this. We had a young wrestler named Jay Lethal. He was an amazing wrestler, really talented, I say kid at the time. We were all stuck on a bus in somewhere in England on a tour. And Jay had this incredibly unnervingly accurate impersonation of Ric Flair, the famous wrestler Ric Flair. He would do this from the back of the tour bus, and you would think Ric Flair was on the bus. And so you could imagine this young kid doing this impersonation, and it would kill. Like, the whole roster's on the bus. We didn't even, at TNA, we didn't split our bus between good guys and bad guys, like heels and faces. We were all just on this bus headed to the next city somewhere in the United Kingdom. And he would do this impersonation. It would kill. Everybody would die laughing. And it was great because, like, those tours are really hard. They suck. They suck for everybody. I'm not even a wrestler and they suck. Like, they're grueling. And Jay would just bring the house down doing it. 3 months later, the character that Jay plays on TV is, I guess, sort of has a psychic break and believes he is Ric Flair, because Ric Flair was on our roster at the time as like a, you know, sort of an emeritus character. Then he eventually started wrestling again. And so we bring that in to the actual show. So I don't know if this is informative. I don't know if this is helping people, but to go back to the example that people are currently debating online, I fully believe that WWE probably said, hey, we got to cut some roster here. And they had to make some hard choices, and they cut Ron Killings. But the moment that fans made it their own and participated in that meta universe, I think it was very smart. I would give credit to whoever actually made the call. I don't know if it was Triple H. I don't know if it was Khan. I don't know who it was. By saying, hey, call him up. Let's get him on a deal. Let's see if he wants to come back. Let's make bygones be bygones. And let's turn this into something in our fictitious world that represents what happened in reality.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because at the end of the day, like, pro wrestling at its core is like, how can we get as many eyeballs to make as much money as possible, right? Like, how do we hype this up for a main event? How do we hype this up for the next match? And yeah, this is perfect for that. I will say that, like, I believe there were other releases or just contracts not being renewed that didn't get as much attention, but I think it's because Truth was positioned in such a way before that, like, the fans really stuck to this and made it a thing.
I think we, in our proverbial dinner party here, if you are a non-wrestling individual, that you hopefully have grasped that. Hector Diaz, I thank you for helping you explain pro wrestling to the world. You're doing yourself and pro wrestling a huge favor, I think, by spreading the gospel.
Thank you, and I hope you apply some of these rules to just anything in, like, your daily lives. I always tell people that, like, a work shoot is out there if you're looking for it, because, like, it really is. Like, Godfrey and I were talking off air about this specific instance. Like, do y'all remember, like, in 2017 when Colin Kaepernick sort of took a knee? It became a national discourse, and it's extended to, like, other things. But, like, there was an instance during the NFL regular season where then Vice President Mike Pence went to, I believe, a Colts game. Mm-hmm. He went there, he sat down, and then he saw athletes kneeling, and then he left. That's taking the real life thing that happened organically, the Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, and then extending it into a work shoot because he was clearly there to get mad. So
the term would be in that world, a political stunt. Like if you watched an episode of Veep, someone would say, oh, that was a political stunt. If you are around or working in wrestling for any significant amount of time, you begin to only see the world as not a total fabrication, but a sort of hyper representation of an initial kernel of truth, a hyperbolic representation at all times. And then the motivation of how you act, like it all sort of looks like you're taking a tiny truth, making it way bigger than it should be, and manipulating it to tell a story.
To tell the story that you want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm treating this as like it's an infectious disease, but it is, you do get jaded. If you ever hang out with people in the business and they're talking about anything in the real world, they do approach, like, pro wrestlers not only, like, I can find you pro wrestlers who not only believe that, like, 9/11 was an inside job, the moon landing was an inside job. I can get you way more specific than that, like, way weirder, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why pro wrestling is, you know, people say everything is pro wrestling now for a very good reason, right?
I would like to point out, as we leave, the current president of the United States, I would say, developed, honed, and refined the persona he puts out publicly every day now to people at the New York Times and CBS and whatever on WWE television. You're welcome.
Don't get worked.